The following interview was recorded in the year 2017 by the Gawler Community Broadcasting Association as part of the Gawler Oral History Interview Project.
Today I am talking to Marilyn Simpson. She is an active member of the Gawler Writers Group and the Gawler Broadcasting Association. She has her own radio program on station PBA at Salisbury. She has raised a family, is a grandma, and has had a working career. But today we are not here to talk about any of that. We are going to chat about the growing up years. Marilyn, it's a delight to have you in the GBA studio today. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Barry. Good to be here.
Can you tell me about where you were born and where you spent your preschool years and your family members?
I can. I was born in Port Lincoln in the year after the war. The war finished, and my dad, who actually came from Mount Pleasant, had been a gardener before the war, and his wife, my mother of course, was a nurse from Port Lincoln. They decided that they would settle in Port Lincoln, and he was growing tomatoes and, you know, various vegetables. Well, I've been told that I used to sleep in the glass house, and Dad wouldn't mind me, you know, in the pusher. But when he, after a year, his brother rang him and said, look, F.C. Newman are selling their horseradish business, and if we buy it, it will set us up for life. So they decided, Dad decided, yeah, that's what they would do. So they came to live at Teetra Gully, where the horseradish property was. And we lived in the same house for a while. Like, it was it seemed to me like a huge house, but when I've been back to look at it, it's the rooms are alarmingly small. I think, how did my mother fit a bed and two cots into this bedroom? I can't imagine it.
And it's still there.
It's still there, but it's pretty much in ruin.
Yes.
Yeah. It's unfortunately, I mean, the building was eventually condemned. I think my brother kept having the ceiling fall in on him. They kept moving him further up the house. But he was a great one for talking at night before he went to see, talk to himself out loud. And Dad couldn't get to sleep, so they were sort of shoving him right down the end of the house so that he could get some sleep.
And so you spent your very young years wandering around a horseradish farm, virtually.
Yes, there were places we knew that we weren't allowed to go.
Yeah.
They were very strict on that. But we did. We had good fun there.
Yeah. And can you talk about any siblings at all that you had?
All right. I had a brother who was a year younger than me and a sister who was another year younger than me. Yeah. So there were 15 months between the first two and 12 months between the next two.
So your mum and dad had to handle three young children under the age of five.
Yeah. Kept them out of mischief, I would say. Yes.
And were you free to explore and wander around the area?
We were, actually. Our first little foray up the hill was Mum took us for a bit of a walk halfway up the hill. And I think Brian rolled all the way down and couldn't stop. but I don't remember when we were first allowed off on our own, but I don't remember Mum being with us much.
Yes. Yeah.
So I think it was just when we were really little that she would take us part of the way up, but later on we really had fun exploring the hills.
That's good. And can you describe the home, especially the kitchen, I guess, where mums and kids spend a lot of time?
Yes. Well, the kitchen, I always thought it was a very long, big kitchen, so it was an eat-in kitchen. You had the table there that we always ate on. It had a wood stove, which later on, I guess, it got changed to an electric stove. And Mum certainly had, when we got the electricity, we got the electricity on when I was 6 years old. And I remember there being, like, pipes all over the walls.
Yes.
And the same with the electricity, and there's all these electricity wires that are used, should be behind the walls, were over the walls. I always felt a little bit embarrassed about that for some reason. But she had a hot water heater over a sink and cabinet up the other end. Yes. Was not all that fancy, really. I know there was a cuckoo clock on the wall, but it's Mum's pride and joy, and us kids,
really?
We played with the dingle-dangle
thing. The dangly bits. Or
yeah, we played with them. And
the pine cones or the...
and wrecked it, so it didn't work anymore.
Yes,
I think that was sort of something that happened. Mm. And years later, at when I was at Birdwood High School, the teacher was teaching physics, and there was something about it, you know, about motion starting and not finishing, and if he ever had a chain, he would show us. But what he described, I thought, that is exactly what we've got at home.
Yes.
That wasn't working with the cuckoo clock. So I asked Mum if you know, Mr. Ayres could have it.
Yes.
And she said, yeah. So I gave it to him. He was thrilled to bits.
I bet he was. Yeah.
Just to demonstrate this phenomenon of physics that I've sort of forgotten about now.
Mm. And in this house that you grew up in the very early days, was there a radio that played?
Yes, there was a huge radio in the corner. It was like a big wooden thing, quite, from my memory, quite wide. Probably as a small child, as tall as I was, really. Mm. Yeah, I used to listen to Kindergarten of the Air on it and dance around the room, skip around the room, do everything she said. And I thought she was a little lady that lived in the radio.
Yes.
Was my impression. Yeah,
it was a very mysterious world, wasn't it?
It was one that I wanted to be a part of, and I said that to my mum, I'd like to be on radio when I grow up, and she said, oh, no, you can't do that.
Yeah.
No, you'll have to work in a shop or be
a standard sort of job.
Yes, yes, yes. She was a nurse, but she never encouraged my sister or myself to be a nurse. She used to tell us all these. She said, no, you don't want to be a nurse. You've got to clean porridge out of old men's beards. And I thought, really? I don't want to do that for a living.
Yeah.
She really put us off being a nurse.
All right, so you grew up in this sort of area and around Tea Tree Gully.
Mm-hmm.
And after all this time of being very young and with your brother and sister and exploring the local area and at home or whatever, you had to go to primary school.
Yes.
So where did you go to primary school and how was that?
Went to primary school at Tea Tree Gully. Actually, thinking about it, I did know a few of the people there. We had met different families at different times. I think my dad used to go to cricket, play cricket, and we'd all go, and I'd met one girl there, and there was another one I'd met from somewhere else. And my cousin actually started school the same day as me.
Yes.
So I did have people there that I knew, so it probably wasn't as scary as it might have been. But I sort of remember that school was a fairly happy place for me, luckily. One of the lucky ones, I would say.
Yeah. Can you describe how you got to and from school? How far away was it?
It was a mile, but there was a Bowman's bus went down the road at the right time, and a teacher from the school, the one who taught the young ones, she caught it at the top of Tea Tree Gully Hill. And so I got on and got off with her and walked to school from her, from the main road, because it was just a short walk up Perseverance Road from where they dropped us off. And then in the afternoon I would walk with her to the bus stop again and catch the bus home. That went for 2 years. My brother did the same thing with me. Then when I got to be in year three and my sister was coming too, Mum said, they can all walk together. And so from then on, we walked. So my sister was five, six and seven, and the three of us walked down that road. I reckon that if we had to do that today, we'd be taken away from them or something for the neglect.
Well, it's probably true.
Because it's a very twisty, windy road.
Yeah.
And when it was foggy, cars couldn't see us, we couldn't see them, and then eventually you'd see some headlights coming through. But we were pretty schooled up about keeping to the edge of the road and off the road if a car was coming, never to accept a ride from a stranger.
Yes.
So a lot of people would stop their cars and say, would you like a ride? And we're not allowed to ride with strangers. And they'd say, oh, but I know your dad. Your dad is Bert.
Yes.
And we'd say, no. And he'd say, well, it must be Joe then. And we'd say, yes. And sometimes we were tempted to get on. There was one truck that stopped and we would not get on with him because on the back of his truck we could see ropes. And we thought he's going to use those ropes to tie us up with. So we just would not get a... So in the end, he just took off. I think he might have called in at our place and told our parents about it.
Ah, the imagination of young children.
Yes, yeah.
So can you recall basically what the school was like? I mean, how many students and how was it structured?
Yes, yeah. it was a two teacher school, so it was a stone building. There was the children, the younger children in one room, the 4, 5, 6, and 7s in another room. There was another room that was a little almost like a sleep out, but and that was where they had woodwork for the older boys. They did, yes. had woodwork lessons there, and there was a bit of a porch in between it all where you put your bags, hung your clothes. I was, because I was in the first row of baby boomers, so we were the biggest class that they'd ever had. And then the next year, my brother's class was even bigger, and the next year, my sister's class was bigger again. So, you know, and so by the time I got to year three, there was no room for the year threes in that small room. So we had 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 together.
Wow.
And the ones and twos just had one room. By the time I left the school, there was actually a third classroom, a transportable had been built out in the yard. And it was a three-teacher school.
Yeah. Those types of schools are almost unheard of now. Can you describe how the classroom sessions went when you've got children of different ages all together?
Yes, it's they do have some like that. You would actually be given an activity that would keep you quiet, like you might have to get the plasticine and with your plasticine make things that began with a k.
Yes.
So you might get a cake and a cat and candle, you know, the sort of words that you'd been taught.
Yes. Yeah.
And while you were doing that, the teacher would be taking another class and giving them direct instruction. Mm. And then some of the things you could do together.
Yes.
Yeah, sort of like art. And there was a movement with dance with movement. Music and movement. There was some radio, because there were some radio programs. We were very, very in the forefront. We had this radio system, and you could switch it on somewhere, and a speaker came through, and this lady would take you through the dance.
So there was a speaker in the classroom.
Yes, and a radio somewhere else. I don't know where.
Yes. Yeah,
and so you had singing lessons were like that too. They went on for years and years. Mm. Yeah.
When we were talking earlier, you mentioned that you loved reading from a very early age.
I did.
Can
yes.
you talk about reading at school and how that
developed? I just gobbled it up. I read all my readers really quickly and easily, and there was a little library in the room of beautiful books with, you know, colour pictures and really lovely, and I read them all.
Yes.
So by the time I'd read them all, they decided that I should start borrowing from the big library that the big kids used. So I was taken in there and found that all the books looked very boring and dull. They weren't like what I was used to. And I found one that had a lot of colour pictures and very little text, and the teacher said, no, you can do better than that, or something like that. I mean, I almost read it while I was standing there looking at it, to be quite honest. And so he made me pick out something else. He might even picked out something for me, you know, try this one. And I found that I could read them all, and I enjoyed them, you know, I understood them. I remember reading a heap of, what's it called, Greek mythology.
From a very young age.
Yeah, I was reading all these books. I didn't have a clue how to say the names of all the gods, but I just sort of worked them out myself, however I wanted to call them.
So this would have been like exploring a different universe.
It was a bit, it was actually, when I was, something I do remember was when I was in year three, they had a standardised spelling test.
Yes.
And most of the year threes, I think we were only meant to get the first four, and if we were very smart, we could get the first six or seven or eight. I just did the whole 50. I just, every word he said, I just wrote it down. Like when he said miscellaneous, I thought miss, M-I-S-S-S, Elaine. I knew a girl called Elaine. E-L-A-I-N-E, I wrote.
You put it together.
Us. I probably just put us. But yes, and then we had swapped.
Yes.
The test, and my friend was really lost trying to mark my work. So the teacher saw that and he said, I'll take that, I'll mark Marilyn's.
Yes.
And I think I got 25 out of 50 when I was in year three. And I think the next best was 28, and that was from a girl in year six. So
impressive.
I was very impressive.
Year three.
Yeah.
8 years of age?
Eight years. And labyrinth was one of the words. And I said to Mum, and Mum said, how did you know how to spell labyrinth?
Yeah.
And I said, because I've seen it in books, but I call it labyrinth.
Yes.
And when he said labyrinth, I thought, it's probably labyrinth. So I wrote it down correctly.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah.
And also in some of these stories you read, at the time I can recall books like The Secret Seven and Famous Five.
Yes.
Are they books you explored as well?
Those books were banned from libraries, and because they were banned from libraries, my mother decided that she shouldn't buy them either. And I got to read these books when I was at other people's places.
Yes.
I really enjoyed them. And I think later on she may have relented and we had some. But, I did enjoy those books. But I had they were a lot of fun, actually, those books. Yes.
Full of adventure is my recollection.
They were. And when we went up over the hills, we used to, reenact some of these things. And one day we found a tunnel that had actually been an old silver mine, or was going to be an old silver mine. It didn't go very long, and it came out into a small quarry that you couldn't climb up. You had to go back through the tunnel. So we made up lots of adventures about that. And any time anybody came and stayed, visited, us kids, we would take them all up there. It must have been wonderful for the parents, because they had all this spare time with no kids hanging about.
That's wonderful. I mean, can I also ask you to talk about play at school? I mean, the playground and what sort of play activities you got up to?
The play activities. There was one log swing, and there was two seesaws. To my recollection, that's the total play equipment.
Mm.
There was, down the bottom of the yard, there were trees and there were stones. And we spent a lot of time down there arranging stones into houses and rooms and playing games down there. Mm. The older kids were allowed to go across the road to the oval or the tennis courts, because that was a very unused road. Memorial Drive didn't have a lot of traffic, it was quite safe.
Mm.
So we played games like Chasey. I mean, I remember running around the school building chasing a little boy that, we liked each other. But all we ever did was chase each other around. When we got back to the place where we started, we'd swap roles.
Yep.
Then the other one would chase the other one. But when we got a little bit older, netball was very, because there were two goalposts there and a netball court marked out.
Yeah.
We played keep away a lot, where you just got together with your friends and you didn't have any zones or anything. You just had three on one side and three on the other, and you played games like that. So I seem to remember that we were fairly active.
Yeah.
The girls as well as the boys were active at recess time.
Physically active.
Yes.
Recess time, yeah. I have a recollection of recess and this thing called bottled milk.
I hated the bottled milk.
Yes.
I really didn't like it. I don't remember when I started hating milk, but I just found I didn't like it at all.
Yes.
And so in order to drink this bottled milk, my mother used to send along raspberry stuff to put with it, or chocolate stuff to put with it to make it palatable.
Mm.
But I really didn't like it. And one time, there was a heap of bottles left over. And so the teacher said, the best six can have a bottle of milk. This was her little carrot to get us all to behave and try hard. Well, I was one of the lucky six. So I got this bottle of milk and I drank perhaps a third of it.
Yes.
And then I thought, I really don't want this bottle of milk either. I was so proud to have won it. So I was quite excited. The teacher was sort of looking at me a bit strangely, thinking she didn't like milk. Yeah, it was really quite funny. In the end, I said, look, I can't drink it. I said, okay, Marilyn, you don't have to.
And was there a favourite lunch that was packed for you, or was there something?
I think Vegemite sandwiches would have been the norm. That's, I know my mum was very good at cooking little cakes, chocolate cakes with icing on. That, so we were pretty envied for that because we had them a lot of the time. Raw carrot was often in there because my dad grew carrots.
Yes.
Just for himself, not to sell.
Mm. So it sounds like the primary school years were fairly enjoyable. I mean,
for me they were.
And as a student, you were doing pretty well.
I was doing all right. I think I was one of those that just sailed along.
Yeah.
I mean, maths was harder for me.
Yeah.
I struggled a bit with maths. I remember the teacher in junior primary, the teacher had this game where she had all these socks bundled up and they were meant to represent eggs. And she used to put some here and some there and some somewhere else. And then she'd give a kid the basket. And I never got to be the kid with the basket. And the kid with the basket got to go and find out how many eggs are over there in that nest and counted them. There were four. Mm. And then over to the next place and how many in there? Three. Oh, so how many eggs have we got all together? So we had to add four and three together. That wasn't my best suit, you know. and then onto that you'd add another number and, you know, it got harder and harder.
Yeah.
By the time they'd picked up all these eggs, a lot of children actually enjoyed that game and asked for it. And I used to say, no, it's a trick. It's a trick to make us do sums. Let's not play the game.
Can you recall any of the names of the teachers who actually...
Mrs. Brittle was the class teacher for the year ones, twos and threes, or ones and twos in the end. And there was a teacher called Alf Chandler.
Mm.
I think it was Alf Chandler, was in the war with Janet Shilcock's father. And if there was ever a bit of an argument, discussion, or, you know, something blew up in the yard, Janet would say, well, I'm telling Mr. Chandler, I'm telling Mr. Chandler, and he'll believe me because he was with my father in the war. Quite funny.
The dramas of the schoolyard.
The dramas of the schoolyard. Anyway, he moved on and we got a Mr. Wood. Mrs. Brittle stayed there forever, but we got a Mr. Wood, and I think he was probably a favourite teacher. He was a really congenial, nice sort of a person, yeah. Mm.
So year seven, your last year in primary school, you did well that year? Or?
I did, because the teacher, Mr. Ward, had a son called Peter, and he was very smart.
Mm.
So Peter and I, we often were battling it out
as to who
would be get the best marks. Unfortunately, I was not good at handwriting. And my maths was sometimes up and down.
Mm.
He was pretty steady all through, but it was always very close between us.
Yes.
But it through the year in year seven, he was transferred. He went somewhere else and we got another teacher. And I easily came top because my my chief opposition left.
Really?
Yeah.
So you were ducks of the school.
So I was ducks of the school, yes. Yeah.
Then you would have been 12?
12, yes.
Okay, then...
I went to Birdwood High School, which was a much larger pond.
Yeah,
we went up on a bus from Janet Shilcock and I were the first two from Teetree Gully to go to Birdwood High School. And I heard quite a long time later somebody said that Birdwood High School was a good school.
Yes.
Until all the riffraff from Teetree Gully started going on. Well, Janet Shilcock and I led the way.
So you started high school, and it's a big change for teenagers.
It is. It was the school that Dad went to, because he lived at Mount Pleasant and he went to Birdwood.
Yeah.
So it was nice from that perspective. Yeah, and I had Janet with me, so I went, she was the only person I knew. It wasn't like I went to that high school and didn't know a single soul.
Yes.
I knew Janet, so we stuck together. And then eventually we made different friends, and Yeah.
And your first year there, what describe the class in terms of size compared to...
It was quite huge. They actually, halfway through the year, they divided that two classes into three because it was very big.
Yes.
So they had the blue room and the grey room. They were the school colours. And the blue room and the grey room, traditionally, was where the first years went, because we called it first year, second year, third year, not year eight, etc. And I think there must have been 40 or more. I don't really... I mean, as a kid, I didn't really take a lot of, notice.
That matches my memory in terms of class size.
Yeah.
They were huge.
Yeah, and there were quite a lot of people there who had come out as refugees from the war. And so I was looking through an old magazine, and the names were incredible. All these Polish, unpronounceable Polish and Italian names of people who'd arrived. Plus, it was a German school anyway.
Now, you were a really good student when you were at primary school. Mm-hmm. How did that transition into the world of high school?
Well, that was harder. That was where I became like part of the top six rather than the top person. But it didn't really bother me. And I actually was one who just coasted. I didn't have huge ambitions, so I just coasted along and did sufficient homework and sufficient everything else to get there. And all my reports reflected that.
Can we actually transition now back to home life?
You're now
around 12, 13 years of age. Obviously, you're growing up. Your brother and sister are growing up as well. Can we talk about sort of what you were doing at home around that time in terms of hobbies, toys?
We live for our sport, actually, netball and tennis.
Yeah.
We were doing that the whole time. Even when we were younger, we were outside playing with beach bats on a bit of cement.
Yes.
And apparently my Uncle Bert walked past, and as he walked past, he heard me say, "That was out." And my brother said, "Well, yours went under the net anyway." And we had no net. We had no lines. But we used to play tennis then.
Yes.
But that involved, we had to walk down to tennis practice and all that sort of thing. But my mother had learnt to drive during this time, and she carted us to tennis matches and to netball matches, and my dad went to golf, and he was a great golfer. He just loved to golf. So a lot of the time we didn't go anywhere because he was at golf, and even on Sundays he was invariably at golf.
Describe to me the Sunday at home. For most families, that's whether they're religious or non-religious, Sunday was kind of a special ritualistic day almost.
Yes. Yeah. Well, as when we were very young, we were sent to Sunday school, taken to Sunday school.
Yep.
The first time we went, it was just my brother and myself. My sister was asleep. She was considered too young to go. Mm. So we went, and apparently while we were away, she kicked up merry hell. She woke up and found out that we'd gone somewhere and left her, and she wasn't included.
Yeah.
And so the next Sunday, she was determined that she was going to Sunday school as well. Mm. Well, the first week we'd been, they made such a fuss at Brian and myself. We really enjoyed it. And there was this special chair that was different from all the others. Like we had these little wooden chairs to sit on, but there was this cane chair with a fancy cushion. So I thought, well, perhaps I can sit there. And I went to sit on it, and I was very quickly told, no, this is for when you have your birthday. And the birthday boy or girl gets to sit on the chair.
Yes.
I sort of knew when my birthday was, and I think it was a while away. So anyway, we sat on the ordinary chairs. And then when my sister came in, I had this message to tell them that she really wants to come, but if she's too young, Mum says she won't bring her again. You know, she'll keep her home. So I was really... And while I'm telling them this, they're saying, "Oh, isn't she beautiful," because she had these big brown eyes and hair that just sort of curled up, and they thought she was wonderful. And then the week before they thought I was wonderful, but not anymore. And then she came in, and of course she did the same thing as I did. She went straight for the fancy chair.
Yes.
and I'm saying to her, "Oh, Beth, you're not allowed to sit on that unless it's your birthday." And they said, "Oh, she's too little to understand. She can sit on the chair." And she just sort of sat there like, She knew she was meant to be there.
The youngest in the family always get away with everything.
They
do. Don't they?
She did. She absolutely did.
Which denomination was that?
It was actually a Baptist Sunday school. Okay. But yeah. My mum was brought up Methodist. My father was brought up Church of England. But yes. At that time, there were two churches in Teatra Gully. There was the Anglican one, and there was the Baptist one. And I think the Baptist one was the only one that had a Sunday school, which is why we got sent there. So the three of us. So for a long time, the three of us would go there on Sundays. But then later on, Dad used to go to a lot of golfing activities on a Sunday. Sometimes it was an open day, like at Cambrai, or different country sort of clubs, and we'd all go, and so did everybody. All the other golfers' wives and children would come too. And then all the children would go off together, because they were mostly country places.
Yes.
We'd go off exploring little creeks and along dirt roads and perhaps play a bit of keep away when we got back with a ball and the mothers used to cook amazing food to take on a picnic. There used to be lamingtons and lemon meringue pies and all sorts of stuff. So, it was... And then quite often there was a barbecue for tea. Yeah. They were quite enjoyable. I remember having a lot of fun with that. And then other days, he used to go to... Dad was quite a good golfer, and he started playing these pennant matches. I think it was B pennant. Yes. Yeah, I think his lowest handicap was 5 or 7, something like that. Anyway, I remember one particular day, we set off early because what he wanted to do was play 9 holes before he started because he'd never been to this course. He didn't know anything about it.
Yeah.
And he wanted, and we got lost. We couldn't find the place. And we were in the Adelaide Hills, driving around literally in circles.
Yeah.
And we stopped and asked several people for details, how to get there, and none of them helped. Till eventually the last one did, and we got there. We got there in time for him to hit off. he was getting very anxious.
Well done.
Yes, yeah. So he didn't get to... And that was the same thing. The other wives and children would be there, and we used to play a game called donkey. You throw the ball over your head, and somebody gets it, puts it behind their back. Then the person out the front gets to turn around, and they have to guess who. And we had this lad who was in Minda Home.
Yes.
Although, but two boys who were both in Minda Home, but one in particular, he wasn't that silly. He used to throw the ball over his head, and then he would put his head down between his knees and watch, which really made all the mums laugh. And he would watch to see who caught it, and he would always point to the right person. But we let him get away with it because we knew that it didn't really matter.
With all these social activities you're heavily involved in, did you make any close friends at the time?
Probably. Well, see, Janet Shilcock is, funnily enough, she was everywhere.
Yeah.
She was at the Sunday school. She was at school with me.
Yeah.
She was at all the RSL activities. She was at all the golfing activities. We went to high school together, and then when I went to teachers' college, so did she. We went to teachers' college together on the first day.
Yes.
so she was one that I was very familiar and friendly with. There were some other girls as well that we did, but it was at high school where I met people who I've kept in touch with the longest. Like, I haven't been in touch with Janet for years. I think she's in Tasmania now. But at high school I got to meet some friends. We still get together now, 4 or 5 of us.
That's three or four times a year.
It is, yes. It's really nice. Because we lost touch a bit once we got married and had kids.
Yes.
And some moved away, but now we're sort of moving back and found each other, and it's really nice.
So as you recall those days, were there certain things you did in terms of, like, movies or clothes you wore? Can you talk a little bit about that?
I didn't really get into movies until I was a teenager. As a child, my parents both believed it was unhealthy to go to the movies, sitting in a darkened room with all those people coughing and everything, and you would be far better off even just lying on a rug in the sun reading a book than going to the movies. So We never went to the flippin' movies, but my mum did take us to pantomimes.
Yes.
And you know, live theatre things.
Yeah.
So after the school holidays, all the other kids would be talking about the movie that they went to see in the holidays, and it would be one that everybody knew about and wanted to see, and we'd been to some sort of little pantomime thing that nobody had ever heard of except us. we always felt a bit out of it.
Yes.
So, but when I got to be a teenager, I think I was looking at the advertiser one day and I suddenly realised that I'd seen every movie that was there. So, that was good too, in a way for my parents. That was good because we'd go in on the Bowman's bus, and the last Bowman's bus left at I forget what time.
Yeah.
It might only have been 11 o'clock. You just had time to run almost from Hindley Street up to Pulteney Street to catch it. And if you missed it, you'd really miss the bus. There was no more.
Yeah.
So they never had any problems about us getting into any mischief or trouble after we'd been to the movies, because they'd know all about it. If we missed the bus, we'd have some explaining to do. I struggle to remember. I know Ben-Hur was a big deal, but
yes.
I don't really particularly remember. I do remember that we used to see two movies, a black and white one usually.
Yes.
And then an interval, and then a second movie. You got your money's worth.
Yeah. And at this stage, you're still reading books, obviously? And it's,
still a bookaholic. I think through my primary years, I read every Anne of Green Bay Gables book, everything L.M. Montgomery ever wrote.
Mm.
I think I read it. I really like those books.
I
was reading anything, really.
Mm.
Yeah, they had some good books in the Birdwood Library. I used to read pretty regularly, always borrowing something.
Yeah.
But I don't particularly remember anything in particular.
Yeah.
I do remember reading one book, which was about four girls who were in, I think they were in the army in England during the war, and they happened to meet up with four guys.
Right.
And I think that was probably the first story I ever read that had a bit of romance in it.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Yeah. And I remember thinking, oh, this is so, what do you call it?
So risque?
not risque, but it was so, it couldn't really happen that four guys and four girls would meet and they all, you know, matched each other perfectly.
Yes,
you know, there was a...
Just didn't seem real.
No. Contrived was the word.
Oh, okay.
It just seemed very contrived,
yes.
But I still enjoyed reading it, yeah.
Mm.
But I can't really remember too much else. It was when I left school that I got more into reading detective mystery books, and that's my favourite genre now.
Is it? Yes.
Crime and detection.
Yeah.
When I was... Oh, you don't really want to talk about when I was older, but what I used to do at the library when I had kids, I'd borrow four books every week. Two would be serious books on religion or philosophy, and two would be detective fiction. Did that for years. Yeah.
Were you still going to church during this period, during the teenage years at all?
Yes, I was. We were quite caught up with... youth club and all that sort of thing, and like on a Sunday, as I was a teenager, we would go to church in the morning. I forget what we would do for lunch, but in the afternoon we'd go for a drive, or we'd go horse riding, we'd do something.
Yeah.
We'd go to church again at night, and after that we would go into town to a coffee lounge.
A coffee lounge?
Yes, a coffee lounge. There was the Camille Coffee Lounge out on, what road would it be? It was a road that led from Teatregully into town anyway.
Yeah.
That was a very, very favourite place.
Okay.
It was very dark in there. And one night, I sort of understood why, because the furniture was so daggy. It was terrible. But I don't even drink coffee. I used to drink some cordial type liquid that they had, which everybody liked, but you know, you could have coffee. yeah, that was what we did. We went to the Camille Coffee Lounge, and there was another one called the Catacombs Coffee Lounge a bit around, but we never actually got to that one. Yeah. Camille was the first one we came to. So we'd quite often just go to that.
And how old were you when you started frequenting the coffee lounge?
It's probably 16, 17. Yeah, yes. And then through the... You see, when I was growing up, 21 was the legal age to get alcohol. So that meant at 16, 17, 18, we were nowhere near it. We went to lots of... There was quite a lot of coffee lounges in Adelaide that catered for that group of people, and yeah, we often...
And when you talk about we, is it you and another person, or just a group of girls?
Well, group... So we'll both from the youth group both.
Yeah,
and then later on it would be just meeting up with girlfriends from Teachers College, because they had a big push. The education department had a huge push on recruiting, and we got paid for doing the fourth and fifth year of high school if we agreed to become a teacher. If we ended up not becoming a teacher, then we had to pay all that money back. But it wasn't very much, but it added up. A lot of us did that.
Yeah. Was that a key motivation, or did you have, or was this thing?
No, what the key motivation was that they really built the teaching profession up to be the most noble thing that a person could ever do for South Australia.
Yes.
Hold the future of South Australia in your hands. And they made it sound really important. And I guess at Birdwood High School, it was a nice school. We had nice teachers, so it wasn't like we had bad role models there. Yes. I don't want to do what they do. You know, it seemed an okay sort of a job to do.
Yes.
And they said things like, if you have children, you have your holidays at the same time that your children have holidays.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, they really did push it. But I think we all thought, well, what else is there to do? And nursing was out, because I knew that I would never make a nurse.
Mm.
And typing and that kind of thing was out, because I was ham-fisted, you know.
Yes.
I thought I'd never learn to touch type or do the sort of things that were required to get a really good secretarial position. Working in a shop, there again, there's sums to be done.
Yes.
And I thought, no, I don't really want to do that.
And clearly you did pretty well at school.
I did well enough, yes, that I could easily get.
So in terms of tertiary study in your family, were you one of the first in
I was, yeah.
That's a mark of that era, isn't it?
It is actually, yes. Because I remember my mother saying, I never thought Marilyn would ever stop studying. But actually, we did a two-year course, which was a real pressure course. They just needed teachers, and they churned us out in a hurry.
Mm.
I mean, these days it's a four-year course, and as a primary teacher, we did it in 2 years. The high school teachers, they had to do 4 years, but maybe it wasn't as urgent to get high school teachers out there. But and we had no trouble getting a job. We had a choice. Would you like to go to Mount Gambier, Elizabeth, Port Augusta? I think there was another one. I chose Mount Gambier. I thought that sounded the nicest of...
It is interesting to reflect on that. You mentioned earlier that it was like entering a noble profession.
Yes, it was. Mm. We were looked up to, and we were role models in the community.
Yes. And you're doing something important for Australia.
Yes, this was what they pushed. And it sounded good to me.
That's great. Now, you did a two-year course, so... You left high school, you would have been, 17, 18?
Yes, I was 19 when I went out teaching.
19?
I was 19, and the funniest thing was that at the end of that year, we were all about 19.
Yes.
And there was a bus trip to somewhere, and I was going on it. And on the day that the bus, we were all there, ready to go, and the lecturer came out and she said, "So where are your forms? Forms, we needed permission from our parents to go on this flipping thing." And we were thinking, next year we're going to be teachers organising these.
You're going to be teaching children.
And taking them on excursions.
And parental approval.
And we'll still be under 21.
Yes.
And we were horrified. But she was firm. She stood firm. No, she said, you have to. And we lived at Tea Tree Gully, and I thought, well, Tea Tree Gully to out of Norwood, there was no there was no road going straight across. The only way to get home and back again was on a bus, and that would have taken ages. I forget how we managed it, but in the end everybody had a form signed by their parent.
So still in your teenage years, you graduated from Teachers College.
Yes.
And where was your first placement as a teacher?
Mount Gambier. So that was really the first time I'd lived away from home. And my first pay packet, yes. I know it was more than my mum and dad thought I would be getting. It was less than what the guys got. We didn't get equal pay.
Ah, yes.
Yes, so it wasn't until quite a bit later that we actually got equal pay. And, you know, my I was out with a colleague once and we were given our checks and he sort of looked at mine and he said, gee, he said, it's not fair that you get that much less than we do. I think I basically banked most of it. I was able to get clothes that I really liked. And I spent a lot of it going up and down to Adelaide from Mount Gambier because I'd met my future husband by then.
Really?
Yes, and I missed him. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you were away from your boyfriend, but also away from your family in a sense for the first time.
Yes, I had
and you were still a teenager. Really?
And I was still a teenager. I had a bit of a almost a breakdown, I suppose. It didn't last very long, but one morning I got up and I just couldn't get moving. And I arrived at school at about recess time. I hadn't rung the school to say I wasn't coming in or anything. And they looked at me and the teacher said, oh, he said, I think you've come back too soon. He said, you go home again.
Okay, yeah.
He said, we can get someone to relieve for a few days. So.
Yeah. Probably around that era, I would imagine. The women's movement internationally was just probably starting to...
Yes.
I wasn't, play some seeds.
I wasn't really a part of it somehow. Yeah. I guess it was more money than I'd ever had.
And how did you find teaching? Out there in the real world for the first time, with your own class.
Yeah, I loved it.
Did you?
I really did, yes. I loved it. It was good. It was a big class, like I think there were 40 in the class.
Yes.
That would have been in 1965.
Okay.
62. Yeah, it might have been 66.
That's an interesting time in Australia.
We were just changing decimal to decimal currency.
Yes.
And there were a lot of other first-year teachers there as well. That
so
was good.
All young teachers together.
We were, yeah, and then there was a good collection of older established teachers. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
How long did you stay down at Mount Gambier?
Well, I was only there for a year.
Yeah.
I put in a sob story that I needed to go back home. And the headmaster, we called him that, he read it and he said, you won't get a transfer on that. He said, they won't transfer you because you're a bit unhappy.
Yes.
And I got a transfer. So he said to me, you should take out a ticket in tax as well.
Yes.
So someone there had a heart.
Yeah.
And then I was teaching at Hope Valley Primary School,
okay,
which was quite close to where I lived at Tea Tree Gully.
Yes.
And then I got married, and the teacher at... I got married during that year. And there was a teacher at Gumaraka who I actually knew from Birdwood High School.
Yes.
She was living in Tea Tree Gully or somewhere like that and travelling up to Gumaraka, and I was living at Gumaraka travelling down to Hope Valley. So we did a swap.
Yeah.
We were able to do a swap, and then I taught at Gumaraka. And then I got pregnant I retired to have a family and didn't get back to it for quite a few years.
For many years, yeah. Marilyn, that is a remarkable story.
My dad was very strongly, a very strong member of the RSL.
Yes.
And to him, the Vietnam War was the same as going to the Second World War. It was something that had
to... your obligation.
It was a patriotic duty, and he saw a heap of people, young people protesting, and he said, they don't know. Probably felt a little bit intimidated by that, but no, I never protested. I never became part of. I was very law abiding, actually. That every year there was a prosh day that the university had, where they used to have a parade and do all sort of get up to tricks, and we were all told at Wattle Park that we were not allowed to go into town for it. We had to attend, you know, we had to stay where we were.
Yes.
I think myself and another friend were the only two people left at Wattle Park.
The rest went in.
The rest went in and I didn't. And I thought, well, that's me. Yep. Missed out again.
Well, Marilyn, that's a wonderful story and a wonderful recollection.
Okay, thank you very much, Barry.
This interview, recorded in the year 2017 by the Gawler Community Broadcasting Association, is available for download for purposes of educational research. We expect that any creative written or electronic work derived from the recording gives due credit to the interviewee, interviewer, and GBA.